Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc.
Last night, I saw someone with your eyes, someone with your smile, someone with your smile. We danced, and though glad that she had asked me to, she didn't have your arms.
About 2 years ago, singer-songwriter Josh Ritter's heart was broken. He and his wife of a few years decided to separate, and while writing and publishing a novel and keeping up a healthy touring schedule, Josh wrote new songs to help understand and heal. The songs add up to his forthcoming album, The Beast in Its Tracks, which will be released on March 5th. In a statement on his website announcing the record, Josh wrote, "All heartbreak is awful. My broken heart wasn't unique, but writing these songs was helping me get through the night, and I didn't have the strength to care or question." Ritter is known and loved in many circles for sweeping story songs with poetic lyrics involving adventure, sometimes magic, horses, trains, ships, women, and historical figures galore. The songs on The Beast in Its Tracks are smaller, they are personal, but they are no less singable and beautiful than his previous work. Josh Ritter and the Royal City Band are playing at The Egg in Albany on Wednesday, February 13th, as part of a warm-up tour for their record release tour. Josh Ritter joins us now. Hi, Josh. Welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
I am very excited to talk about your new songs with you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Sure.
I'll try not to ramble.
The record is called The Beast in Its Tracks, and you wrote the songs when you were coping with the end of your marriage. Before we delve into that sort of darkness, but not too deeply or too personally, how are you now? Are you all right?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm doing great. It's great. The weather's cold. Feels awesome. Bracing.
When you wrote the songs and you knew that if you shared them, you would be sharing relatively unmasked personal stories and feelings, did that at any point give you pause about recording them and putting them out?
I'd say that it was initially the sort of stuff that I was writing felt really totally unmanageable in the way that it's, you know, I think when you're, whatever you're doing, whenever you're trying to claw your way up out of something, I think that the effort may be kind of like admirable, but it's not always like effective, you know, or efficient. And I really believe that good writing should be efficient and, you know, and have its concision, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even the longer songs shouldn't be a word wasted. It's all very small stuff, like songs. And I think I was initially writing very kind of thrashing around things that had their usefulness later on, but weren't any real good as songs. Emotion is really important in a song, but you can't let emotion be more than the ideas you're trying to convey. I mean, I think for me, the emotion has always been in the idea and in the way it's put out. So I wanted to just write things well, but, you know, as I started to calm down a little bit and write the way I wanted, the stuff was really personal, and I felt like, you know, the idea of this stuff being out and exposed was really invigorating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like exciting, really exciting, because I've never really done that before, and it felt like if there was any time for me to actually do that, it would be now.
Yeah, as I was listening to the new record, I kept waiting for, not, you know, just because of I'm familiar with your oeuvre, as it were,
yeah,
for a song that would seem like more of a fable or a longer story song, but these songs are very different, but still very you.
Yeah, and I decided, I wanted to not put a longer sort of song on there for the reason that I felt like I wanted to, like, do something that surprised me a little bit more. You know, I love the longer songs, the story songs. They're so much fun to write when they happen, but at the moment it felt like my own story was like kind of overshadowing that in my own head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I wanted to overshadow anything in anybody else's, you know. I really think that, like, autobiographical songwriting can be good if it's relatable, and I think I was writing with two minds, writing with the mind that I want to catalog my own feelings here, you know, and get them, but I don't want to do that at the expense of, if somebody has gone through or, is going through a similar situation, I feel like the songs should be something that you can relate to, hopefully. Hopefully they're useful in that way, you know?
You were in, you know, a sad emotional place, but kept touring and kept performing. There wasn't any large amount of time where you were off the road. Did getting on stage with your band and the fans help you?
Oh, yeah. The things that helped me, like, that time, like, it just pared down to such a, like, a bright crack in the door, you know? It was, there was getting on stage every night that was sometimes, especially in the first weeks after, I was in the middle of my tour, and like, those were, like, the most horrendous times, but getting on stage was a chance for things to go back to normal. And it's the same with my band. There were these people that I've played music with for so long, and then suddenly I knew what actual real family was, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the Boston Celtics, which were happening to be playing, and were doing well, and, you know, not like the best looking team, not like the flashiest team, but the team that, like, kept on going, and they were playing, and I swear that some nights, for a guy that was never a sports fan, I really related to something there, and I don't know why that is. It could have been fly fishing, but it turned out that it was the Celtics. So those are the three things.
Was the way that the songs were composed when they become fully orchestrated with the guys in your band, was that different for these songs too?
Yeah, I've been really wanting to do like a lot of simpler songs, and I worked on an EP recently with a guy named Josh Kaufman, who's an awesome player, awesome guitar player. And it went so well, I asked him to be a part of recording this new stuff. And that was really fun, you know. It was like the songs are much simpler, stripped down songs because I don't really think that they can bear a lot of orchestration. I wanted them to be simple and kind of sharp without too much there. So that made a big difference. As we go into like performing, you know, the songs will get bigger or smaller, depending on how they feel on stage, and it'll be great to have the whole band there, you know, kind of playing them. I imagine they'll widen out a bit, which will be a lot of fun.
What is the meaning of the title of the album?
I was thinking of a couple things. One being sleep, which feels like a big thing on the record. You know, I'd really always loved the numerous references to sleep in something like Macbeth, you know. So it's, you know, like the heart or bones or anything that's biological and human, there's so many metaphors that can be piled into it and taken out of it, and I really loved that. So I was thinking of, you know, sleep is this thing that catches up with you. And I was also thinking, you know, heartbreak is one of those things that catches up with you, especially how you can wake up in the morning and the sun is out and things are bright and you feel like you're through it all. And you're turning it back into who you were, and then the sun goes down, you get that heartbreak again, you know? And I feel like, you know, as you get better, you increase the distance between those times when it gets you. But it'll get you, you know, for a long time. But that's where I thought, you know, it was a title that felt really a little bit ominous and a little bit, just had a color to it that I liked.
I like that there's the possible double meaning of the word tracks, which is, you know, like paw prints or a path, but also we call songs on CDs tracks, like, you know, play track number six. So there's
yeah.
Like the beast in the songs is the pain and the heartbreak in the songs.
There's something kind of padding through. Yeah.
On a couple of the tracks, there are snippets of pretty hard to hear whispered conversation.
They're not nemesis. I feel like they don't care.
I mean, I got some of it. Like, they aren't nemesis. They don't even care about each other is one of the whispers. But can you tell me why you included that and what it means?
Up at Great North, it's a farmhouse, and it's old, and it's really reverberant. I mean, it really is like a soundbox, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, has so much, like, shaped how my ideas of recording have been for the last several records, which is that, like, that there's a great deal of stuff around the song that is really fun to have in there, you know? It feels, like, atmospheric. And that was a track that we recorded while some people were making some dinner, just to, like, it was kind of like getting dark time. So we recorded that, and there was some magazines getting flipped and read. commented on, and that sort of stuff is really fun. I love the kind of the ambiance of stuff when you know, and especially it worked for a song like Apple Blossom Brag. We recorded that very informally and kind of quickly, and that was just one just was kind of a, felt to me like a gem that just popped out. I didn't want to lose any of that good environmental sound.
Only Apple Blossom. Lord, I'm such a fool for the things that sing so sweet and sad and are so cruel.
Joy to You Baby is the first sort of single off the record, if the music industry still officially has singles.
Totally.
How was that selected to be the first one?
I typically leave the decision like that, you know, unless I have incredibly strong opinions which about that stuff to people who I feel like have a better idea of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember once when I was on a major label, you know, I had where my manager and I went in and played the record for the record company, you know, and it was such a strange thing to see the looks of puzzlement and dismay on their faces as they heard the record.
And then
the radio guy jumping up and being like, that's the single, you know, and it was that great Tin Pan Alley sort of feeling moment. And, you know, I thought, I have no idea. And I realized that, like, I just don't care. You know, I hope that, I feel like that any song should stand up to being played on anything, whether it's the radio or on stage. So if people hear it and they like it, that's I feel pretty good about it. But I am close to Joy You Baby for the reason that I feel like it was a song that, where I realized that the album had taken a turn and had really turned a corner from being a sort of an angry, I felt like kind of an evilly insidious collection sometimes of some songs, to see that it was starting to turn into a broader feeling of feeling a little bit more resolved and generous towards somebody that I hadn't been disposed to feel very good about. I started to realize that my own emotions were changing and I was moving on, and that it felt really good, and I felt a little kind of wistful, but that it was a good moment. And you know, I think that's one of the reasons I actually ever started writing, was so that I could maybe, because the feeling of capturing a moment as it's flying by you is so fantastic. And that moment was flying by me, and I just happened to be, you know, have a pen and be writing at that moment. I do feel close to that song.
I go to the parties, throw my hands in the air, I drink what they pour me, the cups of who cares. Go up in the night sky, up in the clouds, fly over the houses, and looking down, joy to the city, joy to the streets, and joy to you, baby. Wherever you sleep tonight. There's no ghosts in the graveyard. It's not where they live. They float in between us. What is and what if? And cast our own shadows before our own eyes. You don't get them up here though. They don't come up high. Joy to the city. The parking lot lights. The lion of evening. Rain in its eyes. Joy to the freeway. Joy to the cars. joy to you, baby, wherever you are tonight, 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 tonight.
Another song that has a sort of joyful spin on it is Hopeful, which is one of my favorite tracks from the record. Could you tell us a little bit about that song?
I wrote that in the morning of one of my sessions up at Great North. I woke up a little bit before everybody, started coffee, and I went out and was playing the guitar, and I had been messing around with some ideas, you know, and I had lots of little images, but I had nothing else, and that song just came really, really fast, like in a really intoxicating way, and it was a lot of fun to just, you know, that's the sort of thing where you sort of play it for somebody and you can tell immediately whether you yourself like it, and that one felt like especially exhilarating on the autobiographical side to feel like I was getting it the way I felt.
Supposedly it was a wise man who said it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all, than never to have loved. How many times is the truth that you take to be true just truth falling apart at the same speed as you, till it all comes away at a million degrees and you're just a few pieces of fallen debris? And she's hopeful. Hopeful for me. I'm coming out of the dark clouds. And she went away and she packed all her love. And I could not believe it, how little there was. And I stood in the cold kitchen with nothing to say. Who'd keep the whole world spinning when she went away? Yeah. She kept telling me about the good things I deserved. That I wanted somebody I'd mistaken for her. But one look in my eyes and she knows she was wrong, so she wouldn't look back at me until she was gone. How many times did you give all your loving? Find out it was so far from enough. I followed her out into the street in the rain, and the whole world stopped spinning and just went up in flames. And she's hopeful. Hopeful. Coming out of the dark clouds, she's hopeful. Hopeful for me. She says it to me often.
As another song says, a song that you played out, I saw you perform it a few times last year, and it is on the record. You have a new lover now and a baby girl.
Yeah.
I mean, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's pretty amazing. It's absolutely, there's no words. And people say that, and I think when people say there's no words, I always sort of doubt whether they're actually trying to find the words. And then I realized that there just aren't words invented for it. You know, it's amazing. It's so good.
Speaking from observing friends, not from my own personal experience, I don't imagine you have a lot of time to write new music right now, having a relative newborn.
The thing I found is that you can have an idea and you just have no way to, you know, you need two hands to play guitar, you need a hand to write stuff down. And if your hands are full, then you just have to hold on to that idea for, you know, 6 or 7 hours before you have like 15 minutes. And it's just because, like, you know, there's other stuff in the day, and you know, even when you put the baby down, you need to do other stuff sometimes. And so by the time you get around to writing it down, the idea has gotten much more strange and it's polished in a new way. So I find that, like, right now, like, the writing I'm doing feels really colorful, and it's also such a pleasure to just sit down and work for a little while. I sometimes wonder what I spent like 6 hours of my time doing, you know,
sure.
when I could like get this great rush in 20 minutes.
So you're going to be the songwriter to find the words to describe how amazing parenthood is.
I don't know.
No pressure.
I think I'll there's others who can write better about their kids than I think I could.
Josh, the new record is beautiful, and I'm very excited to see you at the Egg in Albany on the 13th of February. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot, sir. I totally appreciate it. I'll see you there.
Great.
Awesome.
I got a new lover now. I know that she's not mine, and I only want to hold her. I don't need to read her mind, and she only looks like you when she's in a certain light. I got a new lover now. She knows just what I need when I wake up in the night. She can read me back my dreams, and she loves them though she never needs to tell me what they mean. I hope you got a lover now. Hope you got somebody who can give you what you need like I couldn't seem to do. But if you're sad and you are lonesome and you got nobody true, I'd be lying. I'd be lying if I said that didn't make me happy too.
Josh Ritter and the Royal City Band are playing at the Egg in Albany, New York on Wednesday, February 13th. For tickets, visit theegg.org. Josh's new album, The Beast in Its Tracks, is available for pre-order and will be released on March 5th. His website is joshritter.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.